Hello, Tri-Deltas. So glad to have you join us for another episode of the Let's Talk Tri-Delta podcast. This is Mindy Tucker, one of your podcast hosts. Today, I'm bringing you another conversation with one of our amazing women of achievement. I love that we're able to bring you the stories of these women who are role models and leaders and who really just bring their best to everything that they do. Today, I'm bringing you my conversation with Lieutenant General Caroline Miller. Caroline is a Tri-Delta from our FIRO chapter at the University of the Pacific. She has an enormous job managing all of the human resources at the United States Air Force. Yeah, you heard me right. She oversees all of it. She shared some terrific lessons on leadership and resilience and also shares her personal story from her battle with cancer. Listen in, and I know you will be as impressed as I am with this amazing Tri-Delta sister of ours. Here's my visit with Lieutenant General Caroline Miller. Lieutenant General Caroline Miller, welcome to the Let's Talk Tri-Delta podcast.
Thank you. So good to be here.
We are so glad to have you and so excited that you are one of our Tri-Delta Women of Achievement this year. Can you tell me what getting that honor meant to you?
Well, first of all, I was completely surprised by the call. And Diane Rath, who I met when I was in San Antonio, she kind of reached out and told me, and I was surprised. And it was really exciting because, you know, I have been traveling around for the last 30 years in the military and very few connections, depending upon where I am in the world. And so it was really exciting to just get reconnected back with the Tri-Delta team and my sisters, and then to be recognized. I'm very honored, and it was quite humbling, actually, because, you know, I just do my job and I don't really think about what I've achieved, but it does make you stop and think about it. So I'm really appreciative.
Well, you have achieved quite a bit, and we're pretty impressed as your Tri-Delta sisters. Is there anything that you can point back to in Tri-Delta that you think may have prepared you for the career that you've had in the Air Force?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I'll tell you, I think, as I think about that, I think what it is the connections. And so I lived in the house at the University of Pacific for a couple of years, and the connections that I made with people from all over, you know, the world that came to the college, and just getting to know them, getting to know their stories, and then learning from them. And it sounds like a fairly easy thing, but that is a very important skill, especially in the military, because we work with people from all over the world, all different lives, all different perspectives. And living with that group of, you know, our house was relatively large. And so we had 50 women in the house, then we had, you know, sisters everywhere else. But just that skill set, that ability to connect with people and to work as teams, I think that really, really helped me in the service, because that's what we do. We build teams and we work together to achieve whatever our objectives are.
And that's your job. You oversee the people in the Air Force, right?
I do.
So why don't you talk a little bit more about that and your actual role and tell us what you do on a daily basis?
Yeah. So my role right now, I am the Director of Manpower Services and Personnel. And so basically that equates in the non-military to human resources. I'm in charge of all of the human resources for the Department of the Air Force.
And that little thing.
So, you know, in my job jar there, it's very vast. So we do not only promotions, retirements, you know, all of that stuff. But we also have mortuary. So anything that has to do with casualty assistant or mortuary, that also falls under my control. Morale, welfare, and recreation, that part of it is also, you know, I set policy for that. So anything that falls in there. So, you know, your fitness centers, your child development centers, anything that has to do in that realm. We're also, I'm also responsible for the resilience, for suicide prevention, I'm trying to think of some of the other things, for the preventive violence, it's just, there's a lot going on there. And then the other piece of my job is actually the manpower. So what is our mission? How many people does it take to do that? And then we manage that and try to make sure that we've got the appropriate, not only manning, but the appropriate people in the right places. So it's a big job. It's a great job. And I'll tell you, I have enjoyed it. I have really enjoyed this career so far.
And it sounds like you're caring for the members of the military, but you've got this extended sort of reach to all of the families and, you know, the people that are in their lives too.
That's exactly right. We take care of all the families, and you know, from my perspective, the families are a readiness issue. You know, people cannot do their jobs. They can't come in and support and defend the, you know, the Constitution if their families, if they're worried about their families, if they're worried about where they live, if they're worried about their schools. And so all of that falls under my portfolio as well.
So as I understand it, getting into the Air Force was not necessarily your plan. You did follow in your father's footsteps, but it wasn't really what you intended to do. So how did that work out? How did you end up there after all?
Yeah, that's interesting. So I had gone to college and graduate school, and I was actually working at Walter Reed Army Institute of Research. I was a researcher. I thought that's what I wanted to do with my life. And when I found out that after a couple of years in a lab talking to, you know, animals, essentially I was doing research on animals with animals, and I was so not satisfied with that. I wasn't excited to go to work. And so my dad had always said, hey, you know, you should go in the military. And I had always said, no, there's no way I'll ever do that, because I wanted to be stable. I wanted to have a stable life. So I moved every couple of years when I was growing up, and I just decided that that's not how I wanted to live my adult life. However, after working in this unsatisfying position for me, I called him and I said, all right, Dad, tell me about this. And so I'm like, well, I'll go 4 years and kind of figure out what I want to do with my life. And what I found was that I loved it. And it was, you know, my first duty station was up at Alaska, up at Anchorage. And that was my dad's last duty station. And I happened to graduate from high school up there. And so that was kind of a neat rematching. But what I found, and why I'm still here 29 plus years later, is because of the people and the airmen and the influence and the positive influence on people's lives that we can make. And so, you know, at first, the first couple jobs, it was all about, hey, this is really cool. I get to fly here, go, you know, do all these different experiences. But then I really started truly enjoying developing airmen, young people, and what we could achieve.
So I bet there is a lot of opportunity to exercise leadership and guide the way that you lead. What is your approach to leadership?
So my approach to leadership, a lot of it is connectedness. And so, you know, your original question on what did Rideout do for me? It's about connectedness. It's about understanding where your team is, each of those members, and then finding out, for me, what I try to do is get to know the individuals on the team. What are their strengths? What do they need to, where do they need some assistance and maybe some additional training or additional, you know, whatever experience. And so I try to do that and to build a team. The other thing, I've got kind of a leadership philosophy, and it's really simple. And I've learned this over the years. And one of it is know your job and know it better than anybody else. Make sure that you do the reading. Make sure you do the research. Who do you influence? Who influences you? What is your scope of responsibility? What's been delegated to you? So that's my first part of my leadership philosophy. The second one is be willing to make a decision. There's so many people that I've worked for that just continue to need more and more, you know, information, and they basically, you can stagnate a unit, an organization if you can't make a decision. Most of the decisions that we make, especially in the human resources career field, they're not life or death necessarily. So do something and move it along and see if it works. And if not, adjust it. Third thing is to communicate. You know, we've got to communicate. So again, that's that connectedness piece. You have to be connected to your team, to your bosses, to your subordinates, to all of it. It's critical. And for a leader, especially here, I've got to make sure that individuals understand my intent. We call it commander's intent. I'm not in a particular commander's position right now, but director's intent. You know, what is it that I want you to do? Why is it important? And how do you get to the whole mission? And then my last thing is, it's okay to have fun at work. I mean, it's okay. We can laugh. We can, you know, we work a lot of long hours. And if you enjoy coming to work, it's a good thing. So, you know, I try to do morale events once a quarter with the team, celebrate birthdays. You know, it's really about appreciating the people that you work with. So that's kind of again, it's simple, but that's sort of what I live with.
I love it. Sometimes the simplest ideas work the best. So.
It's true.
We all like to have fun. So I like including that one. In addition to your career of accomplishments, you are also a cancer survivor.
I am.
Glioblastoma is no small thing. That is an aggressive type of cancer, brain cancer, to be specific. Can you talk about your journey as a cancer survivor?
Yeah, and I will correct the record just a little bit. So with brain cancer, which I didn't know until I was diagnosed with it, is that they never say you're a survivor. They say, because they can never get all of it. So my journey, you know, I was diagnosed just out of a fluke. So in the military, once a year, you have to go do your physical examinations. And I just had a very, very thorough doctor on this particular one. And she had a bunch of questions that she went through. And she asked me this one question. She goes, have you ever had MRI for your migraines? And I said, no, I've only had one migraine and it was, you know, 20 years ago. And she goes, well, we're just going to do one to rule everything out. I'm like, okay. And I had multiple MRIs before because I've had a couple back surgeries. But so I go there and I look at the, you know, what I'm supposed to do. And it's just supposed to be a typical MRI, no contrast. I'm like, oh, 20 minutes, I'm in and out. But halfway through, they came in and they said, we're going to do contrast. And I thought, now that's weird. You know, so it was like, that's not good, probably. Yeah. And then the next day, so then I, you know, I went on my way. And the next day, they called, executive medicine called my office and said I needed to get down there right away. And I'm like, okay, that's clue number two that this is not going well. And so I went down there and they had my brain and they had a big, you know, circle on there that said tumor. And then it just kind of went from there. But I never had symptoms. I had no idea. It was a fluke that they found it. And so, you know, it was incredibly difficult to tell, you know, to tell my son. And there were two people that were very hard. My husband found out first, of course. And then I had to tell my son and my dad, and that those were really difficult. Yeah. But my approach to it was, first of all, at work, I just talked about it. I said, listen, I there's not going to be an elephant. I don't want this to be awkward. I said, if you have any questions about this, please let me know. I've got to go to surgery. And you know, then I had to go to chemo and radiation, but I was very open with it because that helped me kind of talk through it. And it helped the team kind of go, okay, there's not this, you know, oh my God, what's happening. And the other thing I will tell you is that I worked out, you know, my exercise regimen was very helpful because I was able to take, and I know many people go through radiation and chemotherapy, but it's very brutal on your body. I was very active before and I'm still active now. And I think that was helpful, but it was just, you know, it's kind of how I take everything else. I'm like, well, I've got to deal with it. I mean, you just have to deal with it. You just have to do what the doctors say and pray that it goes okay.
Where do you think that resilience comes from? I can sense the physical strength but where do you think you really draw that mental strength from?
You know, I think a lot of it is my mom and dad. Both of them have, you know, just going through life, but also I think growing up as a military child, you become resilient because you start new, you know, every 2 years or 3 years, you're in a new school and you have to either wilt away like a wild, you know, someone in the back of the room, or you just join in really quickly. And so I think that helped. I also think that being active helped. I think being in sports helped because, you know, you have ups and downs through all of that. And you just have to figure out like, okay, you're going to have days in which you don't win whatever race, or you don't win whatever game, or you don't do terribly on a test, but there's a next day. And so you just kind of have to do that. So I just think it was all those experiences. And again, back to my parents, you know, they just were really good champions, and they taught all of us. I have three sisters, so there's four of us, but they taught all of us that, you know, disappointment is part of life and you have to figure out how to get through it. Like, you know, not everyone gets a trophy. And that's what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
You know, that you got to figure out how to get through some of the stuff in life that's hard, and it's not all, you know, sunshine and roses. And so I think it's just, that's how I was raised.
Yeah. And learning that as a child, I think, is important because things do come later in life and then you're ready for it. I think that's so
yeah. True. Yeah. And, you know, I just get concerned that everyone gets a trophy and everyone, you know, now at school, the kids can redo their tests. So they don't even really try because they know they can redo it. I'm like, what are we teaching our, you know, our youth? So I have a different philosophy.
That's all right. It sounds smart. And I think, you know, we all have kids and we're trying to get through this thing and figure out the best way to get it out the right way. Right. for you, you know, coming back, I know it was important for you to come back to work and back to your career after the cancer. Was it different in any way, or what was that like?
Well, it was funny because the day, I mean, so I really had, I had a relatively easy time. I mean, I had to take, they made me take 30 days off, which was fine because, you know, for recoup, but I never really felt bad. But when I got back, my office, you know, they're like, well, we didn't know if we should get you a wheelchair. We just didn't know. I'm like, no, I'm okay. it was just funny. The expectations and I don't know. But I mean, it was, I said, I'm pretty okay. I don't need a wheelchair. I'm back. It'll just be, I'll just have to do these treatments and everything. But I tried to get back right to it. And they're like, do you not want to take any more time off? I'm like, I feel okay. And I don't need to just sit at home and, you know, think, woe is me. I just need to start my life again. And so it was relatively easy. And for me, I mean, it's probably a coping mechanism too, because I had things that I didn't, you know, that I could work on, that I didn't have to think of, you know, the consequences or what's going to happen down the line or anything. So sure. It was important.
Yeah. Well, you're definitely an inspiration, and I think a great example of strength and resilience. And we're lucky to have you as a TriDelta member, and so grateful that you joined us this morning. So thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you. This has been a real honor. And I really look forward to, you know, I just started reconnecting with the TriDelta, the sisters in San Antonio, and I'm looking for a chapter here. And it's really good to get back into it. So thank you.
You are very welcome. We find women at all ages and stages that find us again or run into a sister again. And it does make a world of difference. So congratulations on your honor as one of our Women of Achievement. And we look forward to seeing you a lot more around TriDelta. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a great day.
Wow, what an example of leadership and getting through tough things in life. She has such a no-nonsense approach. I love hearing her perspective on her life experiences. No question why she was recognized as one of TriDelta's Women of Achievement. If you like this conversation, you will love what's going on over at the LEAD Network. We are interviewing amazing women and networking and just having great leadership conversations. I hope you will join us for that. You can check it out over at tridelta.org/events. We'd also love for you to join us at LEAD Chicago this summer. If you are in the Chicago area or want to join us there and would benefit from a day spent growing and networking with your TriDelta sisters, then we have the event for you. You can also find all of that information on our events page on the website. There are so many fun, exciting things going on at TriDelta right now. We hope you'll keep in touch with us, subscribe to this podcast, and of course, give us a 5-star rating. We'd love to have that from you. Thanks for joining us today. Delta love until next time.